Welcome back to Horizons.
Emma Regan, welcome to Horizons.
Thanks, David. Glad to be here.
I understand that the Church of St. Govnet in Kiel is having its 150-year anniversary this week. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, so maybe I'll tell you a little bit about St. Govnet first. She's also known as St. Govnet of Ballyvourney. She's a revered Irish saint, often associated with healing and beekeeping. She's believed to have lived in the 6th century, and she's very particularly venerated in County Cork and County Kerry. The legend associated with her is that she fled from her home in County Clare, and there was a family feud that she was trying to escape. And then ultimately she settled in Ballyvourney, but on her journey, she ended up going through Kerry. So there's centres of devotion to her back around Dunquin near the Blasket Centre in West Kerry. And then also in Ballyvourney, they celebrate her every year. And obviously then the church in Kiel is dedicated to her. So that church was constructed in 1874, opened in her honour there. And I suppose there's several miracles, like I mentioned, that she's associated with. So one was healing powers and her ability to heal the sick. And then where the bees come in is that there's a legend that she used bees to protect her community, that there was a band of thieves and they were attempting to raid their settlement, and she prayed for help and a swarm of bees emerged from a nearby hive and they drove away the intruders. So that's her association with bees. And then finally, I suppose her finding her place in Ballyvourney was that she was told by a guide that she would find somewhere where she would see 9 white deer grazing. And it was in Ballyvourney that she ultimately saw that, hence her journey through Kerry.
Oh, Sheena Rao Serfad, Dunquin is interesting that that's part of her legend, because I went to Gael Scolvig Asman in Tralee, and as part of fifth class there, we all had to spend, I think it was like three and a half weeks living in Dunquin, only speaking Irish to try and have the language permeate our brains. So I probably learned then St. Govnet was an important part of the community, and then the years atrophied that information from my brain.
Yeah, I think there's a walk up behind the Blasket Centre and there's a holy well there. With the Dingle experts now will be after me if I got that wrong, but I think there is.
I understand you're involved as well in pastoral work. Can you describe to us in one word what that means to you?
Yep. So one word, I guess, would be accompaniment. So accompanying people through the good times and the hard. And thankfully today we're here to talk about one of the joyful times as we share in the celebration of the 150 years of St. Govnet's Church in Kiel.
Excellent. And do you live near St. Govnet's Church?
Yes, we live beside a little river on the back of Cathair Cunri, so it's near Inch Beach. It's a beautiful place, very special. It's all wild nature all around us, very tranquil place. So if anyone is passing on a trip from Inch, you can stop into the little church and leave a little prayer intention there.
I love Inch Strand. That's a beautiful location. There's not many beaches there's many beaches in Kerry, but there's not many places where you can walk on the sand for what feels like basically infinite time. I've gone a bunch of times myself to try and walk to the end, and every time I've given up and gone back.
Yeah, it's stunning. We're so lucky to live in such a beautiful place. I've made it to the end, but on a bike.
It's great for the Achilles muscles if you try and do it barefoot, as long as there haven't been 10,000 jellyfish deposited on the sand. I know you've been studying pastoral ministry for the past couple of years. It sounds like you had a diverse range of topics and speakers. Can you tell us about some of them, please?
Sure, yep. So we've been studying at Mary Immaculate College in Limerick under Dr. Reverend Eamon Fitzgibbon. So there was a load of topics. The first one we started with was psychology. We were working with a lady called Joanne Macmillan. So we had to kind of look at our psychosocial development growing up and reflecting on where there might be wounds left by life that could impact our judgment in our pastoral care. So it was very deep and introspective process to go through that. The next kind of topic we moved on to was another amazing lady, Anne Francis, and she had done extensive research on women in ministry in Ireland, and she had created a book on that. It's called Women in Ministry in Ireland. And it's really a significant contribution to understanding their experiences within the church. And then we met Maureen Kelly, and she had set up a pastoral care team in the Diocese of Killaloe. And she spoke about our earliest childhood images of God and the language of the psyche that that would have brought in on us. I suppose the image that I remembered when we were doing that exercise was the Sacred Heart picture that was probably in everybody's kitchen, and all our family's names being written onto that picture. And the other memory I probably had from that was about a music book from a mission that had come visiting the parish where the whole community was singing along.
Does music play an important role in your life?
Yes, music's very important to me. I suppose I love all music, but I suppose particularly if you're in a kind of a church situation, sacramental music always adds to the occasion. And I'm part of the Kerry Choral Union charity choir that's led by Sharon Reedy, and she always chooses amazing sacramental songs for us to perform. One that really stands out for me is a couple of months ago, we performed the Make Me an Instrument of Your Peace song. That's the prayer of Saint Francis of Assisi, and we performed it in a quarry cave down in Valencia. It was a really special experience. And tonight actually we have a charity concert in St. John's. So it'll be a mixture of hymns, but it'll also be some of the old favourite Christmas carols.
Oh, that's great. You've a concert on tonight. What time is it on?
7:30, I think.
7:30 in St. John's.
Yeah.
Excellent. And singing in a quarry, the acoustics of that must have been exceptional.
It was very strange where we were. It didn't actually sound that loud, but I walked out the kind of corridor of the cave while other people were rehearsing, and it sounded amazing in that space. So I think we were in quite a large space, but when it was in the narrower space, it was beautiful, but just an incredible experience.
Well, those kind of acoustics are fascinating. I remember I was in Blarney once, and there's, a sort of a hollow castle there. And in the base of the castle, they had an orchestra playing just randomly on the day I was there. And that was reflecting all around the grounds in ways that really didn't make sense to me. It took me a while to sort of track down where the music was coming from.
Yeah, it's definitely one I'll remember.
You've mentioned to me before we started recording that your studies also covered discernment. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure, yeah. So a lady called Fionnuala Cullinan, she taught us about discernment, and I suppose it was about people's kind of dreams for how our world would be. And I suppose she talked about God's creation, or God's invitation, I suppose, for us to be kind of co-creators with him to make the world a better place for other people. So it was very very moving, I suppose. And she would have explained discernment about being in tune with the Spirit of God as we make our daily choices in our lives, and about combining kind of prayer with our action.
I know as well you studied the history of the church with Michael Conway. What sort of insights did he share with you?
So Michael provided a fascinating overview of the church's history. I suppose he focused very much on how the early church was a kind of a minority group. They'd no social or political power. Instead, they were just focusing on kind of spreading good news and meeting in people's homes. And then I suppose he looked at where things became more formal. So later, when the Roman emperors, when one of the Roman emperors converted to Christianity, then the church kind of became more connected with political power and started to be run a bit more like an institution, a bit like the Roman Senate and the government. And then large churches started getting built as the citizens, I suppose, you know, followed their emperor and became converted as well. So it was an interesting journey through it. And then he probably brought us up as far as a Vatican II in the 60s, which was a call to, I suppose, involve lay people in the running of the church. So to move away from that institution approach, and, you know, we're obviously still working on implementing those changes today. I suppose the hope where the church would become a place with healthy dynamics, a place for faith exploration and open conversations, a place that allows kind of freedom and diversity. I suppose we hope that it'll be a place to discover new ways of living faith. And obviously the synods are going on in Rome and in Ireland at the moment, and we can start to see the transformation and something new emerging.
And with new things emerging, how is your community addressing changes in the church?
So St. Gobnet's in Kiel, and I suppose St. Carch's in Kiltala are the two churches in the Castlemaine parish where I'm living. So they've not had a resident priest for the last 5 years since Father Luke Roach retired. So instead, Father Danny Broderick, who is the parish priest of Milltown, he acts as a moderator for Castlemaine. And obviously everyone here is very grateful for all the time that he dedicates to taking care of everybody. And then he's helped by the other priests of the Killorglin pastoral area. So there's Father Kevin Sullivan, Father Fergal Ryan, Father Kieran O'Sullivan, and from Milltown, there's the Deacon Reverend Connor Bradley, who also comes sometimes and works in Castlemaine. And then there's a massive team of volunteers, and you know, they manage all the day-to-day stuff. So, for example, when we come into the church to light a candle, someone has opened the church doors in the morning. Someone has made sure there's candles available and something to light them with. And these little things, they often go unseen, and they're probably taken for granted by people. But someone has to take the time to make sure all of that is laid out. Even when we go to Mass, the church is warm, it's clean. There's always wonderful flower arrangements in place, and everything is ready for the visiting priest when he comes in. Then obviously, you know, there's the maintenance side of things. So during the summer, the grass is cut, the crib is put up. So it's thanks to all of these people behind the scenes that have kept this church open without a resident priest for the last few years.
That's very interesting. That's in line with some of the mapping exercise recommendations that I've seen being implemented across the diocese. I was speaking with Martin Kennedy about those sorts of things. I think more parishes will be implementing those kind of adaptations that you're talking about, that you're doing down in your local area.
Correct. Yeah, that's all part of the Moving Forward in Hope initiative that Bishop Ray is pushing out. So, and as you mentioned, Martin, we actually studied collaborative ministry with Martin, and a lot of that is about growing teams within parishes and pastoral areas where people are co-responsible with the clergy for the management and the running of the churches, and kind of fostering cooperation then with neighbouring parishes as well. So, you know, resources could be shared and experience and things.
Fantastic. Getting back to your own work, you've also studied practical theology subjects. How was that experience?
Yep. So we had a number of, it's called pastoral or practical theology subjects. So it's a different branch of theology, and it's how to apply the theology, I suppose, practically in our modern lives in pastoral care settings. So my placement associated with that was in a nursing home in Killorglin, working with the residents there. So that was amazing, and I learned so much from them. And then we also covered under that practical theology subject a lot about ecology and biodiversity, And I love being out in nature. And there's now a mandate for 30% of church grounds to be given back to nature. So St. Gobnet will be delighted there as we're celebrating with her, given that she was known for including bees in her miracles. She'll be happy with that mandate.
Yeah, and the bees and St. Governors would be very happy if we could return 30% of the church grounds to biodiversity and to the bees who live within it. Is there any other insights you can share with us about community-led churches? Because this is something that's going to be implemented on a wider scale going forward. So what sorts of things could other parishes look forward to or need to know about going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. So a community-led church, I suppose, is a place where everybody's gifts and skills are utilized. It's about action for peace and I suppose focusing on building kind of meaningful relationships within our faith community. And it's about showing our kindness to other people and our respect for nature. So the example I often use when I'm trying to describe it is an extract from an essay. It offers a good analogy. The essay was called A Whirlwind of Change, New Life, One Jesuit's Experience. So it's about a priest who he visits an area that had a community-led church, and he had never experienced that before. And he wrote about it then in his essay. Will I read a small bit of that for you?
Yes, please do.
Okay. So it says, Mass is introduced by a reader who, in a couple of sentences, outlines the theme of the readings. Then the little children, not yet at communion stage, come up for a blessing and go off with the parishioner for their religion teaching while the adults listen to the readings and the homily. The congregation sings its way through the Mass. The words are thrown up on an overhead projector onto a screen. It's not concert standard, but everybody joins in. The little group, different each week, who prepares the liturgy for Sunday, choose hymns that people like and can manage. The Eucharistic ministers keep an eye on the sick of the parish and bring them communion. Volunteers do all the work concerning the church. I was given a typed page of parishioners who need special care, the sick or depressed or housebound, and which parishioners bring them communion. The financial statements come out quarterly so that people know what is needed. I was handed the parish program for the autumn, which detailed for Saturday evening and Sunday morning masses who the Eucharistic ministers were, who the readers were, the servers, the collectors, the gift bringers, the flower arrangers, the cleaners, and the maintenance of the church. It gave dates for the forthcoming meetings of the parish council and the parent teacher association of the school, the casserole club who cook for families who've had a birth, a death, or some other pressure time, the liturgy group, the St. Vincent de Paul group, the music group, the Marian group, all of this for a parish of 110 active, not well-off Catholics. So I find that an interesting kind of practical way to explain, I suppose, what we'd be striving for with the Moving Forward and Hope initiative and community involvement. And a lot of this is already going on today in a lot of the churches, but maybe not so formally.
Oh, that's lovely. That's like a wonderful story of togetherness and community and everybody trying to get everything together to just make it work. Thank you for sharing your experiences and insight. Before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts or reflections?
Yeah, so I can share a little reflection. It's by an unknown author, and it kind of resonates with our journey, I suppose, that we're on at the moment with the Moving Forward and Hope. And it's called There's Always a Hope. There's always a hope, though it may be quite small. There's always a star, though the darkness may fall. There's always a glimmer of gold in the gray, and always a flower growing by the way. There's always a song floating out in the air. There's always a dawn to the night of despair. There's always a path for the faithful to tread, and always a bend in the roadway ahead. There's always a chance, but you've got to believe. You've got to be ready to see and receive. The hints and the signs, although faint they appear, to wait and to trust till the meaning grows clear. And when through the dark of the shadows you grope, you've got to remember there's always a hope.
That's beautiful. Thank you very much for sharing that and for joining us this morning on Horizons.
Thank you, David.
After the break, an amateur history buff talks about what he was able to dig up when he was looking into St. Govnet's Church.